Now, here's a question for you. If you were to take an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander person with the same income, education and lifestyle as a non-Indigenous Australian, to what extent would the differences in illness and premature death rates between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians be eliminated? You probably think a lot. But the answer is that equality in those factors only reduces the gap by a third. So what would reduce the health and life expectancy disparity between Australian First Nations people and the rest of the population? A supplement in today's Medical Journal of Australia looks at Australians' health in 2030 and our path to better health for all. One of the chapters deals with this challenge facing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities and argues that the factor that could radically reduce this disparity is culture. Dr. Summer May Finlay of the University of Wollongong is the lead author. Welcome to the Health Report, Summer.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So, culture is a big word, isn't it? I mean, what are the elements of culture that the evidence suggests determine health and well-being?
Look, culture is definitely a big word. And when we're talking about culture, we're talking about Aboriginal ways of doing, being and knowing. So it's the way that we think about the world, the way that we interpret the world. And again, it is often the things that are unseen. So we may speak English, we may dress like everybody else, but it's the way we behave and think about the world. And it's also the way we connect to our country. So I'm a Yorta Yorta woman. My country, I didn't grow up on my country, which is down on the Murray River, down near Echuca. But it's also our kinship structures, Aboriginal languages, our cultural expression, and also self-determination and leadership. So it's really just the way we move through the world.
And you talk about continuity as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, as an Aboriginal woman, often people don't see what it means to be an Aboriginal woman, and it goes for most of us, but it's the way I was raised by my mum, who's an Aboriginal woman, and her mum as well, and it's that continuity and connections that we've had to our culture since time immemorial that actually is what lives and breathes on in us and is often not very well understood by the mainstream health sector.
Now, the question I asked, you know, in my introduction to you, were really typical what are called socioeconomic determinants, education, income, how good your housing is, where you live and all that sort of thing. This is very different from that. What evidence base is there that these cultural elements that you're talking about can determine how long you live, whether you get heart disease early, that sort of thing?
So it really is something that is an emerging space. Talking about culture particularly started in Canada with Michael Chandler in the 1990s. And we've got an emerging evidence base here in Australia when you're talking about Western evidence. When it comes from an Aboriginal point of view, when you look at the way that the Aboriginal community-controlled health sector has had such great achievements at actually improving the health and well-being of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people since they were established in the 1970s, that's testament to how culture, which is what is the core centre of the Aboriginal community-controlled health sector, that culture really plays a role. So we have Western evidence from a research point of view that's emerging through the studies like the Michael Y study, which Ray Lovett leads from the ANU. But there is also obviously that practice evidence, which is established through the Aboriginal community-controlled health sector.
You used the word control, and we've covered this a lot on the Health Report over the years, is that if you look at the Whitehall study in London, which was a study of civil servants, as you know this well, there's a health inequity gradient between the people who are at the bottom of the employment ladder to the people who run the department. And control is part of this, and chronic stress that occurs when you're not in control of your life in the middle. And that's the kind of secret element here. Is this about control and chronic stress when you don't feel that things are culturally appropriate?
It is certainly a part of it. So when we're looking at an individual point of view, that's certainly an element of it. But when we're talking about control from an Aboriginal community control point of view, we're actually looking at a collective approach to health rather than just an individual approach to health. So when we're thinking about the Aboriginal definition of health, it actually is thinking about the whole person in their community. So looking at how they're situated, how their kinship structures are, how well-rounded their community is and how healthy their community is. So it's not just taking that really individualistic approach, it's looking at it from a whole of person, including their community. So control, I think, is a slightly different concept within an Aboriginal setting.
It's more community-based. So what do we know at this point, apart from community control? Well, I'll use the word community control to use your terms. You know, we've got community controlled health services and many other elements of healthy Aboriginal communities. What are the elements of implementation here to actually implement this sort of cultural approach to improve the cultural determinants of health?
That's actually the key question, because we've actually had culture be at the centre of a number of policies since 1989. And again, your listeners may not be aware, but we have over 140 Aboriginal community controlled health services around the country, and they're run by and for Aboriginal people. And that's the key element that's missing. Often in mainstream health settings, or when we're talking about policy that's being developed at, say, a PHN level or the state level or Commonwealth level, they're done by non-Aboriginal people who don't know our communities and our culture. What we actually need is Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people leading the way in this space, like we've got with the Coalition of Peaks around the Closing the Gap framework. So the new Closing the Gap framework has strong Indigenous leadership right at the top, and that kind of needs to be emulated through our entire health system if we're to take a true cultural determinants of health approach. So, and this needs to be done in collaboration with the things you were talking about before with the Whitehall study in terms of the social determinants. When we're thinking about housing, everybody needs to have a house, right? And that then helps people have stable education, employment, etc. But we need to be thinking about how to build that house in a way that meets the needs of our Aboriginal communities. Our families are bigger, more mobile, etc. And that's kind of the cultural approach, is everyone needs a house, but the house might look different for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
So you've got to be open to that, to the community determining its own destiny.
Absolutely.
And it means,
I mean, our communities...
Sorry, go on.
Sorry. I was going to say, our communities know our community is the best. We have strong leadership in all of our communities. They may not be on the radio like I am with you now, but I can tell you they're out there every day working in our communities. And all they need is someone to go out and ask them what they need, and you're actually going to have better solutions than what we have now.
It's interesting with COVID. In many ways, that's what the Commonwealth did. It just got out of the way and allowed this group of peaks to get on with it and just run it themselves.
I wouldn't say they got out of the way. I'd just say they were slower than the Aboriginal community-controlled health sector. I know it sounds really tongue-in-cheek, but it actually is what happened. So our services started gearing up for COVID as early as February and started putting out materials, like health promotion materials and pandemic responses. There was a pandemic response by the Aboriginal community-controlled health service, which is the New South Wales state body, at the AHMRC, as early as March. So our services were recognising the needs in their community, geared up really early, and actually just went out there. So, and in terms of COVID, what we've actually seen is about 0.6% of the COVID cases have been Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander, when we're 3% of the population. So we have had a huge success within our communities at making sure that we're protecting some of those vulnerable people in Australia.
So let's hope those lessons are learnt for the future.
Absolutely. And if we could actually make sure that Aboriginal community-controlled health services and other Aboriginal organisations are appropriately resourced to meet the needs of their communities, and also trusted to be able to deliver to those communities, because, as I said, they know their communities best, we will continue to see good results.
Summer, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Dr. Summer May Finlay is at the University of Wollongong.